From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Get ready, finally. Day four, final day of the conventions. The conventions season is finally done. The surprise has got to stop. I imagine the surprise has got to stop. And I think it's going to be a 75-day sprint. It's going to be so interesting. Brett Baer is standing by. Josh Krasshauer, Fox News Radio, political analyst, editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider, because a lot going on with these feast ceasefire talks, too. I want to get his insight on that. And we have a lot to talk about. As the vice presidential nominee went out there yesterday, Oprah Winfrey was out there yesterday. Bill Clinton was out there yesterday. Maybe he said for his last address to a convention. And he says he's been there to every convention since 1972. So before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Take Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Their Project 2025 will make things much, much harder for people who are just trying to live their lives. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump did say, I know nothing about this on Fox and Friends 20 minutes ago. Day three of the DNC. It's a party that refuses to acknowledge they have been in power, but using star power to sell two things that have done nothing to support, freedom and common sense.
Number two.
And for him to say about Project 25 is disgraceful. They know I have nothing to do with it. I had no idea what it was. A group of people got together. They drew up some conservative values, very conservative values. I have no idea what Project 25 is.
Yep. Trump, 75 days to potentially cap the greatest comeback in American political history. His game plan for success as his team begins to chronicle the Harris flip-flops and try to get her to say something about her policies.
Number one.
Tim, it's Kamala. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. How about you?
I'm good. You're going to be fantastic tonight.
Well, I'm ready. Thanks for the opportunity. It's going to be electric in there, and the messages this entire week are so great.
That is more of the phone calls back and forth between the running mates. It's not over until the VP speaks, and that's tonight as Kamala Harris takes the stage. What she will say and what she should say, as we now can start to really examine her record and her demand that she reveal what her agenda will be like if elected. Even if her running mate actually said the same thing, the American people owe it to the American people to say what we'll do. Brett Baer joins us now, chief political analyst for Fox News, anchor a special report every night at 6 o'clock Eastern time. Brett, welcome back. Well, you know what? I did give a brilliant introduction. When we do, in fact, get him, I will actually not introduce him again. I'm just going to ask him a question right away. So I just got off the air on television with Kellyanne Conway, and I asked Kellyanne in the break, so Kellyanne, what is your takeaway? I mean, you've been to so many of these. You're here at the DNC. You're doing your own show on Fox Nation. What is your takeaway? You know what she said? She says they're trying to make Trump the incumbent, and they're trying to make the vice president, the sitting vice president, the insurgent. Brett Baer, do you agree with that? I don't know if you heard the whole thing, but Kelly, I just got off the air with Kellyanne on TV, and she said in retrospect they're trying to make Trump the incumbent. Is it successful?
Yeah, listen, and I hear that, by the way. I hear in these speeches a lot of trying to make Donald Trump the incumbent, running against Donald Trump, saying we have to have this change. We have to have this big focus on the economy and this big focus on doing things differently. You know, they're doing it with a rewind, fast forward, backwards, 3.5 years. You know, you got to get past the Biden-Harris, and then you run there, and then you say, I really want this change, and then you fast forward again, and that's what it is. It really is remarkable trying to kind of reshift.
I wasn't expecting it. I guess they also bowed out of democracy's a threat, and now they're just saying that President Trump is small and selfish and not really that tough. I think that's a tough sell when a guy gets shot, stands up with blood on his face, and yells fight. I'm pretty sure that shows you're tough. If you ask him into the military, that's the way he would profile now.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, it's shifting. It's depending on what is working, and threat to democracy and
freedom. If that didn't work, but freedom. Do you think freedom will?
I don't know. It may work for a theme for a convention, you know, because it covers a lot of ground.
Because if you look at freedom, there's only one party that's talking about what kind of car to drive. If you talk to any of these dealerships, they're upset because if you go to New York or California, they can't even – it's hard for them to get gas-powered cars to sell. They're all forced to sell these electric cars. In New York, you probably don't know this, but they're actually thinking about banning certain refrigerators and the stoves that you buy. We know about in New York, they also have to let boys get dressed in girls' locker room if they feel like they're a girl today. They're also just went through a whole primary without telling the guy that got 14 million votes that's not going to be the pick. You're not free to pick your own candidate if you're a Democrat. You will tell you who you're going to use, and it's going to be Kamala Harris. There's a problem with freedom in Democrats.
Yeah, and in New York, and that's a good counter. It really is. Whether, you know, some candidates get there, we'll see. I do think that all the things you mentioned are really strong mentions for candidates, especially in moderate places, that there is a center or a center right.
Here is so the other thing is, if you look at Kamala Harris, if you look at the Democrats, if you look at what Trump has going for him, it's the economy, it's inflation, and it's the border. And now suddenly they're trying to make Kamala Harris, if you look at these ads, tough on the border. Listen to Hakeem Jeffries last night, Cut 12.
Kamala Harris and House Democrats will lower costs and grow the middle class. Kamala Harris and House Democrats will fix our broken immigration system and secure the border. Kamala Harris and House Democrats will strengthen the relationship between the police and the community.
Really? I can't imagine a party more fractured from police and from the border than this party. I know it plays well in that theater, but I'm wondering outside if they really think they could remake their image in 75 days.
Well, definitely not on those two issues. I mean, I'm sure they envision remaking it on different issues, but those two are really tough. I mean, they're really difficult for Democrats to suddenly rephrase. You know, I was talking to Governor Shapiro yesterday on a special report, and he was saying how it was refreshing to see this candidacy, you know, deal with the tough questions. It hasn't dealt with them. You know, I mean, when she says in 2019 that she is 100% about banning fracking, and then the campaign puts out a paper statement saying, no, that's not her stance. She's for fracking. For a place like Pennsylvania, I mean, that's an important issue. And I think you have to have the candidate actually address it in her words before you believe the type on the page.
Yeah, great interview with Democratic leaders and Daly yesterday, but with Josh Shapiro too, very talented guy. I don't know enough about him, but I hear he's moderate. I don't think you're in Pennsylvania and that successful if you're extreme, so I hope he's moderate. I think the country needs more Joe Manchins. I really do. And Senator Portman's. I don't care if you're an extreme righty or extreme lefty. For the country, you need to be closer to the middle, in my view. But the one thing that Governor Shapiro should bring up is lift the ban on LNG leases and exports. Right now, they're in a pause. And they did it because they want to, I guess, kiss up to the green element in their party. But it hurts all the Baltic nations. It hurts Japan. It hurts Europe because they're counting on us to fill in where Russia left off.
Yeah, it also empowers Putin. I mean, in the big picture, all of that does is raises the price of natural gas and thereby gives Putin more money. Yeah, listen, I think this is a big issue. And energy is a big part about freedom, believe it or not. Freedom for the U.S. to operate how it wants to.
Here's Bill Clinton last night, cut 7.
Now let's cut to the chase. I am too old to gild the lily. 2 days ago, I turned 78, the oldest man in my family for 4 generations. And the only personal vanity I want to assert is I'm still younger than Donald Trump.
And the crowd roared. Your thoughts about how Bill Clinton went over?
Yeah, I think, listen, he made some points, and he was, you know, he was very, he was Clinton, but he's lost a step. I mean, and I think that, you know, him calling Donald Trump old, I'm not sure that that really, you know, is something, because, you know, age is a number, and Trump said that from a long time ago. Even when he was running against an 81-year-old, he said, it's not about the age. It's about how you handle yourself, how that age translates into your body and how you deal with it. Because if you look at Donald Trump, I mean, there's nobody that's saying that he can. I mean, the guy's an energizer bunny.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, I don't think energy and youth. Like, for example, I look at James Clyburn. The guy's older than both of them, and he looks great. I think he's 84 or something. I'm watching him walk the other day, and a guy has got the gait of a 60-year-old. So it doesn't really matter. Don't tell me your age. Just let me see what you're doing. Let me see how sharp you are. I mean, look at Britt Hume. In my view, he's never been better. He's more on top of his game than ever. You don't say to yourself, how old is Britt Hume? You can't say. You just want to know what he's going to say next. And I might be biased, and I'm willing to admit it.
No. Listen, Britt, by the way, I need him to give him the award of the conventions because, you know, this is not an easy gig. This is not something that, you know, you walk in there and it's so easy to get to the set. And, you know, these hours are great and it's so amazing. Meanwhile, they're going so far into the night, you know, into midnight, Eastern time. He deserves a medal, and you know, it's awesome to have him on the set.
It is, and I think he's the greatest guy, but you always know him better. But Brett, the stuff that you're doing on Special Report, on taxes, on crime, on being on that chip and giving people a sense of Chicago, why was that so important to you? I know as a viewer, I love it. Why was that important to you to get out off the set?
Yeah, I mean, I really take these advantages. You know, we're someplace for a week, and why not do something that shows people the place that we are and the issues that people care about? I think it's really important. So every time we go someplace. Whether it's a convention or, you know, a swing state that we're going to or something, we try to do that and get out and about. And fortunately, I have a great staff, and it takes time. It's not like you just add water and it happens. But we do it. And as I get off this interview, I'm going to shoot something right now that'll air tonight.
What is it?
I can't tell you. It's really good.
Really? You can't tell me? That's unbelievable. No, I can't even break a story with you.
No. I'm going to shoot some issues with delegates who are going to kind of have this panel about, you know, how they feel about things. And it's really interesting. You know, it's not undecided voters. Right. They're Democrats. But they view things differently depending on where they are.
I know with taxes, for example, they come out and say, where's this money going? Why is taxes so high? Well, it's going to legacy, past commitments. And then they link – I did not know they linked inflation with taxes. So if inflation goes up, taxes go up. If I'm living paycheck to paycheck, I'm totally screwed. I did not know that. You got that out of them.
Yeah, it's really amazing. The fact that and I love Chicago. It's a beautiful place. I you know, my wife is from Chicago. But it's wow. When it comes to taxes, this is not a place that's easy. It's one of the highest in the country.
Yeah, real quick. The problem with the Democratic Party, as you know, they're a very green party. They're not talking about it. They are for amnesty. They're not talking about it. They have a huge problem with Israel in Gaza. They're not talking about it. Only hostage families. Believe me, there's a huge pro-Palestinian faction in the party that's been told to keep it down. So I don't know what when Kamala Harris actually has to speak about her issues and where she stands. She's in danger of losing some of the support. By not saying anything, she could be everything to everybody. Just final thought on that.
How long was your honeymoon? You know, think about it. How long was it?
You know,
the actual
honeymoon?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like the feeling of the honeymoon. You know, maybe it was 60 days. Maybe it was 90 days. If it was 90 days, you know, there's 72 days left. And I think that literally they're thinking, let's get this feeling for 72 days. And I don't think the non-specific feeling of a honeymoon is going to take you that entire way. But there are some people at this convention that I know are thinking that.
He is Brett Baer. Brett, thanks so much. Stay safe.
You bet.
Great job. Watch him tonight, special report, but all, of course, the recap coverage too. When we come back, I'll squeeze in some calls. BrianKilmeade.com if you want to write it down. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, first of all, he's a total lightweight, and he shouldn't be even having any access to possibly being president. The guy, he's been a terrible governor. They've had nothing but problems in their state. He has no capability. They call him coach. He's a semi-coach. He coached some football for a little while. This guy is a lightweight, and he shouldn't have access.
So that's the President of the United States, who's on Fox and Friends earlier. You know, they basically said that he's going to be run by Project 2025. We know the people of the Heritage are extremely bright people. We have them in all the time. But they put together a 900-page conservative agenda for the next Republican president. But we don't know who that is. We think it's going to be Trump, right, if he's going to win. It doesn't mean you got to take any think tank doctrine. So if the Brookings Institute, which tends to lean left, came up with a doctrine, does that mean Kamala and their friends with Kamala Harris, I imagine, hired big thinking Democrats or become big thinking people in government when they're done? A lot of them go to think tanks. They all know each other. Of course, there's going to be linkages and forwards in one guy's book and one woman's book. And then they go to the Heritage. Aha, there's a link to it, the Biden administration. No. They know each other. They're friends. They might think alike, but one is a think tank and one isn't. So they're trying to do that. They said the president's going to cut Medicare, cut Social Security. He has never said that. Why don't you at least look at what he's done and just tell me what you didn't like about it? Look at what he's going to do. Tell me what you don't like about it. Why do you just make stuff up? Because it just gets it's misinformation. You're mad when social media does it? What about when you do it from the microphone?
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And we know if these guys get back in the White House, they'll start jacking up the costs on the middle class. They'll repeal the Affordable Care Act. They'll gut Social Security and Medicare. And they will ban abortion across this country.
Okay, and none of that's true. Well, why make it up? I mean, why make it up? Over and over again, he says he's not touching Social Security to the point where Republicans are kind of mad at him because Social Security is about to go bankrupt. Medicare needs to be revisited, too. But he says, look, I'm not cutting that. That's not where I'm going to start. That's not the way Trump operates. Typical conservatives have operated like that in the past. I mean, isn't there enough to criticize with Donald Trump? Do you really have to make things up? Do you really think he's going to attack the middle class? Do you know his tax breaks, his tax reform, I shouldn't say shouldn't a tax break, affected the middle class more positive than any other class? Josh Krasauer joins us now. Josh, political expert out in Chicago, Fox News Radio political analyst too. Josh, I thought that was odd. Why put that in if it's clearly not true?
Well, Brian, there's a lot of political jujitsu that Democrats are trying to attempt at this convention. I mean, they're trying to co-opt the phrase freedom from the Republicans. They're trying to the whole mind your own damn business. Tim Walz has been one of the most negative kind of hitmen in the Democratic Party even before he was tapped for the ticket. But they're trying to use some of the Democratic Party's own vulnerabilities and use it against the Republicans. And look, we'll see if it works. We'll see what the vice president herself has to say tonight. But there's a lot of negativity coming from a convention that's supposedly about good vibes.
And, you know, they're trying to make it seem like Trump's in office. They're like, we got to change these things. We're not going to go back. Excuse me. You're in office. We'll change it now. You're literally in office. It's not that your party's in office. You are in office. I mean, does she not understand that people are going to put two and two together sooner or later? Should they just talk about freedom? Are they for freedom when they tell you what car to drive, what refrigerator to use, what stove to use? That boys, is it free that boys now get to dress in girls' locker rooms if they say they are? Free to overturn primary results? Free not to tell your parents when to switch genders? Free not to bring thousands of illegals in and use your tax money to pay for them? I mean, there's a lot of freedom going on there.
Well, Brian, there's a reason you're not hearing a whole lot about the Biden-Harris administration's record, because a lot of people don't like that record. You look at the poll. I mean, that's sort of the disconnect in the polls. People are not satisfied with the direction of the country. They're worried about the state of their own personal finances and the state of the broader economy. But Harris has tried to kind of etch-a-sketch her way away from policy, away from substance. They're trying to run a convention on vibes. They're trying to run a convention on just you know, literally good feelings and attacking the you know, Trump as not being you heard all the lines last night of being in it for himself. This is their best chance to get those hits in. There's going to be a lot of reality checks coming their way as the campaign really does get underway after the convention. But that has been the message: all vibes, all style, not a whole lot of substance.
Yeah. So I asked Trump today, about 2 hours ago, what exactly about the bill didn't you like about the border bill? Cut 36.
They say that you killed the bill for political reasons. Did you kill it because you wanted to do it yourself? And if you fixed the border, it would have hurt your chances getting reelected. What do you say to that?
Brian, I didn't do anything on the bill. People would ask my opinion, but I didn't do anything on the bill. I think they respect my opinion. It was a terrible bill. But more importantly, if they want to fix the border, they don't need a bill. The president of the United States, which is what I did, I didn't have a bill to close the border. I closed the border.
So, I mean, he went on and he just said I could do it through executive orders. That's what he planned on doing. But that is what they keep bringing up. And that's what Senator Kelly keeps bringing up. We had this great bill and we blew it. But do we remember the genesis of where that bill came from, Josh? That bill.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Go ahead.
I mean, there's a lot of audaciousness on immigration. Now, by the way, Brian, polls also show immigration being the most vulnerable issue for Democrats. So they're clearly trying to kind of reframe the issue. They're bringing the legislation that Biden was championing. But, you know, what did he end up doing? He used the executive orders to reverse what he had done at the beginning of his administration. So clearly there are presidential powers that don't even need Congress for to actually tighten up security at the border. He's done it already. I mean, he's obviously had to backtrack on his own immigration policy from early in his administration. But look, Trump is, I mean, part of politics is about making that case. Trump is going to have to say what he told you on the show and really bringing it to the public in terms of campaign ads and on the speeches he gives at the rallies. Because look, the Democrats have been successful in sort of planting some seeds, both at the convention and since Harris ascended to the nomination, planting some seeds and trying to change the reality of what happened on those big debates and big issues.
Think about this, Josh. We can't think in grandiose terms because we're in the middle of this tornado. We've got 75 days to sprint. But if you think about it, Republicans had a whole convention around taking on Joe Biden. They probably spent $100 million taking on Joe Biden. They pulled him. And they put a new opponent. A lot of what the Republicans had worked on, rallied against, built around, changed, evaporated. So this total change of a game plan has got to be unnerving. And then suddenly, it looked like he was steaming towards a reelection. Now it seems the polls are all close, if not him trailing in a couple of battleground states where he was winning. and Virginia and New Hampshire no longer look like they're in play for now. And at the same time, she's had the momentum of being new, momentum of a vice presidential candidate, this long honeymoon, now the convention, the first opportunity to maybe get some news and change the direction, in my view, was RFK Jr. Friday is supposed to bow out and endorse Trump. This is what he said, cut 42.
So I've known him for a long time. He's a, as you know, he's a little different kind of a guy. Very smart guy, a very good person. If he endorsed me, I would be honored by it. I would be very honored by it. He really has his heart in the right place. He is a respected person. Women love some of his policies, and I guess some people don't like some of his policies. But overall, I thought the Democrats, he was a Democrat. I don't know what he is right now, but he was a Democrat. They treated him very badly. I think he would have, you know, he goes around saying he would have beaten Biden in the primary. I think there was a good chance.
Well, he never got a chance to primary, and it looks like Nicole Shanahan, his running mate, thinks they're going to go with Trump. What changes? There's so many different views. What changes if RFK is on board the Trump train?
Look, I think this matters a whole lot. One of the things that happened when Kamala Harris took over the ticket at the top of the ticket is that a lot of the voters who didn't like Biden or Trump but leaned a little more Democratic, leaned a little more liberal, actually went to Harris. So a lot of the younger voters went to Harris after that switch. But the remaining RFK Jr. voters right now are predominantly more Republican, much more Republican, the ones that are left. So, you know, I looked at the data in the Fox News poll and some of the other polls out there. I think you get an RFK endorsement of Trump, at least a point boost, which it matters a lot in these close races and in all the states that matter. So I do think this endorsement, this is an election of margins. It's going to be very competitive. Every little bit matters. And some of these independent people who are skeptical of politics, not in love with Donald Trump, not in love with Kamala Harris, but they lean a little more conservative, they may end up moving to the Trump ticket, and that could make a difference in some of these close states.
And I just want your opinion. I've watched J.D. Vance. I've been seeing a lot of these pressers. You might have been busy, but because they're in the afternoon. I'm really impressed. I really am impressed. There's no issue he's afraid of. He just does random questions from local reporters, national antagonistic networks. He is totally comfortable in these issues. What is your take? What did you think, and how do you think he's doing?
Yeah, look, I think he's improved. I think he's learned what it's like to be on the national stage and has really kind of adjusted accordingly. Look, this is something new for him. He's only been a senator for a few years. He's tapped by Donald Trump to be at the top of the ticket. And now he's playing the traditional role, I think, quite effectively, of the attack dog, of the person who's going out there in the key swing states and really responding to what you're hearing on the convention screens at night. It is tough for the opposition to really get a whole lot of time and really a chance to respond to what you're hearing at the convention. But I think Vance has made the most of his efforts, and he's certainly going to be he is uniquely positioned to be the attack dog, the person who's really not afraid to throw punches and respond to some of the attacks coming at them from the Democratic convention.
So, Josh, there's been 70 arrests outside. Everyone seems to be anti-Israel big time, and pro-Palestinian big time, maybe, and some Hamas outside. Give us an idea of these protests and how many people sympathize inside the United Center with the people on the outside yelling about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big storylines of this convention. How many? I mean, I don't think it's a whole lot, to be honest, of anti-Israel delegates. But one of the issues last night, Brian, was that there was that very, very moving testimony from the Goldberg Poland family, whose son Hirsch is being held hostage by Hamas. And it was a very moving moment at the convention. There are these anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian demonstrators that are in the convention, delegates, that were so upset about the speech and the fact that they didn't have someone who was Palestinian to give a speech at the convention that they were just sitting and blocking some of the entrances at the convention and protesting. Ilhan Omar went to speak with them. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted her support for them. So that is the divide in the Democratic Party. They tried to paper it over through some of the speeches throughout the week. But boy, the far left, they've indulged this far left faction, this anti-Israel faction of the party, and it's becoming a big, big political problem for them.
And we know it's going to get bigger with college campuses, and that is going to be that's going to be problematic, especially as this ceasefire drags out. I want to see Netanyahu finish the job, because we're going to come back in 8 months with another massacre, because they're not going to stop. They're going to look at it as a victory. What about the whole Joe Biden people being bent out of shape? What about Nancy Pelosi being persona non grata with the Bidens? Some probably look at her as a hero. How is that playing out? What's the undercurrent like there?
It's awkward. I mean, she, behind the scenes, played a key role, obviously, in pushing Joe Biden, the president, out of the race. There's still a lot of hard feelings. I thought it was her speech, well-crafted and well-delivered, you know, avoided the elephant in the room that everyone was thinking about when she was on stage. Look, Pelosi is a master tactician. I think what you're seeing with Kamala Harris and the benefit it's gotten Democrats, and at least in this moment, the sugar high, you know, Pelosi knew what she was doing. And but the Bidens haven't forgotten it. They're not even at the convention. They're in California having a good time, not vacationing in Northern California. They're far away from Chicago. That tells you how unpopular the president has been and why there was such a drag on the ticket for so long.
NBC News headline, Pelosi's a villain in Biden's inner circle and a hero to the rest. NBC News, in the morality play that yielded a new Democratic presidential nominee, Pelosi could be seen as the heroine who risked a political backlash to save her party's chances in November. But even she admits she did not expect Kamala Harris to consolidate these delegates. She said, I thought it would be more of an open process, but to her credit, she rounded it up and kept everyone out. That's the surprise in this, correct? That's one of the unheralded surprises, that Harris suddenly became a student, a political insider, and gathered 500 delegates before anyone could blink.
Yeah, that's the surprise. And I think the other surprise being that the handover was more seamless than even some of the most enthusiastic Democrats expected. It was a nasty civil war within the party, debate over Biden versus Harris. A lot of the top Democratic strategists, like James Carville, thought that there should be an open convention, have someone have the convention in Chicago be a place where Democrats choose their next nominee. In the end, they got behind Harris, and she's benefited from that unity. She's gotten this sugar high of support. I don't think that's going to last once the campaign really gets underway after the convention. But that was something that really surprised mm-hmm. and I think relieved a lot of the Democratic delegates here.
I expect Kamala Harris to do good tonight. She can read a prompter. She's got experience. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, I think you heard a lot about joy. That was the theme
right.
Last night. I don't think you're going to get a lot of policy. One thing I am looking for in terms of policy, there was a line that Governor Walz mentioned about middle-class tax cut. They're trying to etch-a-sketch their way to the middle. She's erasing her record as candidate in 2020 and even as vice president and trying to kind of offer some proposals, at least broad themes on policy that are going to be a little more moderate. We'll see how she sells it, and we'll see if the public's going to believe it.
Josh, thanks so much. I'm sure you're looking forward to getting home. The convention season officially ends tonight, probably at 2 in the morning with the Democrats' format, but it ends tonight.
It's been a long 4 days, and we're looking forward to watching what happens tonight.
Absolutely. The game starts Friday, 75-day sprint, 1-866-408-7669. I see the first four lines are filled. We'll get to them in just a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, here's my overall thought. Bill Clinton, after all these years, is still full of crap. I know him well. I was an impeachment manager. He described what Biden inherited. He will mislead you. Bill Clinton will look you in the eye and lie to you. Biden inherited the most secure border in modern American history. He inherited $1.87 gas. He inherited a vaccine to deal with COVID. He inherited a world where Iran was in a box. And he inherited a world where there were no wars. But Bill Clinton didn't tell you any of that, did he?
Senator Graham nailed it, because I thought Bill Clinton was a little better than his old self, but he was all over the place. I have no – the other thing that bothers me is that you have to understand that you're not the star. Shorten it up. Make it concise. Get in, get out. Don't ignore the schedule. Don't tell me that they want to give him 25 minutes. He had nothing to say. I mean, people look at him as a luminary. Yeah, go do it. You want to get him out there, that's fine. Obviously, he's gotten some issues. I'm watching his hand tremors. But keep in mind, the guy was on Jeffrey Epstein's plane more than anybody else. Look at this guy's background. Why does he get a total pass and no one else does? This is the party of female rights. Believe me, Paula Jones and his background. How many more stories do you need about him before they get put him in Jimmy Carter land? Jimmy Carter, they look at him, they like him now because they appreciate what he did after he left. But no one wanted to touch him for 40 years. I mean, it's amazing to me that they give him Wednesday night. It's crazy. Linda, listening on KFTK in St. Louis. Hey, Linda.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy. I'm on. Listen, they don't put out there what Kamala has said in the past. I think that the radio stations, everybody needs to be putting that out there because we're just hearing what she's supposedly wants now. But I think a lot of people probably didn't hear what she said in the past.
Well, we're bringing it up, Maureen, Linda. And it's because she says she's going to change her views on that. We're not letting her off the hook, believe me. And I promise to bring that out. And they are running digital ads now. They also set up a site of what she said in the past, did the Trump campaign. So that is out there, too. Maureen is in New Jersey. Hey, Maureen.
Hi. I'm calling because you had asked the other day how to get to know them, kind of like the last caller had just asked. Or was mentioning, but there was a clip I saw on TV, and it was on Sean Hannity's show, and it was of walls when somebody had mentioned that Trump was building walls 20 feet high.
Yeah, he was going to build a ladder 35 feet.
Yeah, and just to see his smirk and the excitement in him and for his answer, the whole picture just sticks in my mind where there's no way anybody will change his mind. He's like so passionate to break down these walls. It's crazy.
I know. But yet that whole building was surrounded by fences, three fences, back to back to back. But they don't work, right? Believe me, they work. In Kamala Harris's new border ad that portrays her as tough on the border, you see Trump's wall in the background. Please don't buy what she's saying.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here. I am not in Chicago. I remain in New York. A lot of people are in Chicago. It does look like final looks intriguing. It is a huge pep rally, but I'm just so glad this will be the last time I'm talking about the conventions because we have Kamala Harris is going to speak tonight. I got it. And then we're done. And then it's 75 days sprint to the finish. May the best campaign win and the candidate win. And it's short, much shorter, and it works to her advantage. But this is more than winnable for the former president. Britt Hume at the bottom of the arrow put it all in perspective. Mark Thiessen standing by. But for now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Take Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Their Project 2025 will make things much, much harder for people who are just trying to live their lives. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this.
Oh, man. Day three of the DNC. It's a party that refuses to acknowledge that they have been in power, but using star power to sell two things that have done nothing to support freedom and common sense.
Number two.
And for him to say about Project 25 is disgraceful. They know I have nothing to do with it. I had no idea what it was. A group of people got together. They drew up some conservative values, very conservative values. I have no idea what Project 25 is.
Trump, 75 days to potentially cap the greatest comeback in American political history. His game plan for success as his team begins to chronicle the Harris flip-flops.
Number one.
Tim, it's Kamala. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. How about you?
I'm good. You're going to be fantastic tonight.
Well, I'm ready. Thanks for the opportunity. It's going to be electric in there, and the messages this entire week are so great.
Yep, Kamala and Tim Walz, just in a casual conversation, caught on camera. So natural, so real. We get this magic over and over again. It's not over until the VP speaks, and that's tonight, and tonight will be the night. Kamala Harris takes the stage. What she will say and what she should say, and we can now know and officially start examining her record as vice president, senator, AG, DA, and then, of course, her future. As soon as we find out what that is. Until that time, we'll just have to go about her past and then watch her deny it the next day. Mark Thiessen, Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor, a fellow at AEI, and host of the podcast, What the Hell is Going On? Mark, how's it going in Chicago? How do you rate this convention? What's the theme you're walking away with?
Well, first of all, I'm pissed at you, Brian, yeah. because you bumped me from Fox and Friends this morning for some guy named Donald.
Oh, like, yeah, you were bumped.
What the hell?
yeah. Trump 45 took 35 minutes.
I understand it. What's going on in Chicago is we've got freedom and joy. We're going to campaign on freedom and joy. We're going to bring freedom and joy to the American people. I mean, I don't know. Americans are paying $125 for a $100 basket of groceries. 60% of them are using credit card debt or payday loans to pay for the groceries. Do you feel freedom and joy? I know I don't feel freedom and joy.
Yeah, here's Governor Tim Walz last night, cut three.
For me, it was serving in the Army National Guard. I joined up 2 days after my 17th birthday, and I proudly wore our nation's uniform for 24 years. My dad, a Korean War era Army veteran, died of lung cancer a couple years later. He left behind a mountain of medical debt. Thank God for Social Security survivor benefits.
Right. And by the way, I love that he served. I love that he did in the GI Bill. I think it's a great message for the next generation. If you're frustrated where you are, don't know exactly what you want to do, do what J.D. Vance did. Do what Tim Walz did. The problem with the embellishment on what he coached, what he did, the embellishment on how he served. I know that there's about 50 Republicans who signed a letter demanding he become transparent about what his service is.
Yeah, I actually loved Brett Hume's comment last night when he was saying that he had been the assistant coach of his daughter's high school basketball team or a grade school basketball team, so he should go by coach now. I was the assistant coach of my kids.
I did not hear that. It was a little late for me.
But for now, yeah, exactly. But, you know, I was assistant coach of my son's squirt hockey team, so I want you to call me coach from now on when we're on the air together, okay?
I will say this, Mark. I have a few players here that I did coach that call me coach when they do see me. So
well,
it is kind of weird. Yeah. All right.
We're all coaches here in America. So, everybody's a coach.
Yeah, but, you know,
but
he was a volunteer.
Everybody's a command master sergeant, and neither is Tim Walz. So there
right.
you go.
And the problem was, you know, he coached for 3 years as a volunteer coach, and he was a linebacker's coach. And that's fine. But why are you running on that? You don't run on that.
Because they've got nothing else to run on, Brian. I mean, truly, this is the most unexamined, unvetted ticket in the history of American politics. I mean, Kamala Harris, the top of the ticket, didn't make it to the 2020 to Iowa in 2020. Didn't do a single debate with her Democrats. Didn't get a single vote. Didn't do a single town hall this year, talking to voters. Hasn't done a single press conference. Hasn't answered a single question from a reporter. Hasn't done a single interview. Is given one 15-minute policy speech in which she spent $2 trillion in 15 minutes and got panned by the Washington Post liberal editorial page for having gimmicks. No one knows what the hell she believes in. She's the cipher candidate. And Tim Walz, nobody's ever heard of him. So, no one knows what they believe.
The day before Biden dropped out, Tim Walz was on television saying how great Biden is, how he's going to make a great president. And then all of a sudden, he's like, I am now the running mate for somebody else.
So Kamala Harris, a few weeks ago, she was giving speeches talking about how great Bidenomics was. Now she can't get far enough away from it.
So on energy, in 2019, she endorsed a nationwide ban on oil and gas fracking. 2024, yep. The campaign says she does not support a total ban. The economy supported the new Green Deal, co-sponsored it, and a federal jobs guaranteed salary. 2024, the campaign says she no longer supports a federal jobs guarantee. 2019, she supported Medicare for all. In 2024, the campaign says she will not push for Medicare for all. She flip-flopped on immigration, supported decriminalizing border crossings. Now, calling for a strong border and an earned pathway to citizenship. Crime ran as progressive prosecutor looking to end cash bail. 2024, described by campaign as a pragmatic prosecutor taking on predators. Your witness, sir.
Yeah, she's lipstick Bernie Sanders. I mean, she is on record supporting the entire Democratic Socialist agenda. everything. That was the lane she was running in 2019. And if she's not supporting those positions anymore, doesn't she have an obligation to sit down
yes.
for an interview and explain why she changed her positions and what came about other than the fact that they're supremely unpopular? give us a substantive reason why you endorsed the Green New Deal and now you're against it. Give us a substantive reason why you were for Medicare for All and now you're against it. I mean, literally, remember, you know, she's literally the new John Kerry, but she was before she was against it.
But let me bring up something you usually write about. The difference between if she does, let's say she comes out and she gives a moderate platform, and she's everything we just said. She's is against no cash bail. She is against decriminalizing border crossings. She wants to finish the wall, whatever. You know who gets ticked off? Two-thirds of her party. Two-thirds of her party is for the new Green Deal. Two-thirds of her party is for defunding the police. I think two-thirds of her party do not want a strong border. I think they want a pathway to citizenship. I think that if she says this stuff, comes out as a moderate, she loses some of the left, and the only risk you have of them staying home. I mean, how many people in that arena were upset that two parents of a hostage came out and spoke about the need to not forget them and to be pro-Israel? How many of the in that arena were not happy to see that?
I think a lot, but they would be much more unhappy about Donald Trump winning. I mean, keep in mind this is the same party that nominated Joe Biden as the genial moderate, and they all knew he was just a moderate Trojan horse for them, for the Democratic Socialists to ride into the White House and spend $4 or $5 trillion in new government spending, and they wanted to spend more. I mean, so you know they're perfectly happy to let her campaign as a moderate. I mean, there was one guy who I can't remember whether it was at some black liberal event the other day said just behave for 70 days. Can you do that? And then you can be crazy again.
Well,
I mean,
we
that's
saw
basically
that.
What the Democrats are saying. They're like, we'll just behave for 70 days. We're going to not say anything crazy for 70 days. We're not going to put any meat on the bones of our agenda, because everything that she says right now, I mean, she's just a vessel that everybody pours their hopes into. But the second she starts giving specifics, like saying, well, I'll give people $25,000 government subsidies for mortgages, and the Washington Post editorial page says that would increase the high, inflation and mortgage rates. That's not a good idea. You know, every time she becomes specific, much better to campaign as a cipher and just, you know, ride joy and hope and into the White House. So she's going to do that, and then they'll do everything she said in 2019.
So if you look at Trump, what do you do about that? Number one, there's a lot of tape. There's a lot of tape of her heralding Bidenomics. There's a lot of tape of her talking about the border. And I've never been to the border. I've never been to Europe either. So you have all this stuff that's out there. You have a ton of it. So if you're Trump, how do you organize it? How do you portray it?
You focus on it nonstop, and not focus on other things that he tends to focus on sometimes. This is he said the other day at a speech in Pennsylvania that, you know, that people say, sir, please focus on policy. Don't insult them. And he's like, well, all they're doing is insulting me. Why can't I insult them back? It's like, because that's all they have. All they have is to attack you and to goad you into an insult fight, and because they know that's going to alienate swing voters. If you talk about policy, you win. If they talk about policy, they lose. So hold her. You know, the one advantage she has, as you say, it's not just like some old press release she put out. We have her voice saying these things. It's not long ago, just a few years ago. So expose that and talk about what they want to do, what they've done over the last 4 years, what her plans are to make it to go even further left, and contrast that with your record. Because this is all about this whole election for the next, 70 days or so is about tens of thousands, handfuls of swing voters in six swing states. His base is on fire. I know America has forgotten the assassination attempt. The MAGA world has not. They're going to walk over hot coals, molten lava, broken glass, and whatever else you put in front of them to vote for him. He needs to focus on winning over swing voters. Remind them what they liked about his presidency, which was the policies, and not what they didn't like about his presidency, which was his behavior. And if he can do that, it's his election to win. If he can't do that, it's his election to lose.
Absolutely. And I look at it as a flat-footed tie, and it really is you know, you really have a chance to be. It's not over, you know. So either one, it's not a win, it's not a loss.
The stakes are so high, too. This is there's no benign alternative to Donald Trump. This is the most left wing ticket that a major party has ever put forward. If they win the presidency, take back the House and take back the Senate, it is game over. They're going to get rid of the filibuster. They're going to add D.C. as a state so that the Republicans can never win back the Senate. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They're going to add members of Congress to balance out redistricting. They're going to pass their radical agenda with 50 votes. I mean, we're going to have the Green New Deal. We're going to have Medicare for all. Our country will never survive 4 years if they get unified control of power. The stakes are too damn high. We have to be Trump has to be disciplined. He has to beat these people because we can't afford to have them in power.
Right. And I think he should be using surrogates, too. But a couple of things. They're trying to make Trump look like the incumbent. They're going to say that he's running and he's selfish. He's only doing it for him. Bill Clinton last night, he's for him, myself, and I. I was always about service. She's about service. She was at McDonald's saying, can I help you? And she's still saying that today. That obviously is the theme because the threat to democracy was not working. People weren't buying it, the angry Joe Biden. Now they're saying we're upbeat and we're new when she's not. She's not only a Democrat in power. She is the Democrat in power. So,
you know,
now you got to bring that back.
The idea that he's selfish, I mean, look, he has a supreme confidence in his ability to get things done. He has a huge ego. I get that. But and with good reason. He was very successful at it as president. But the idea that he's getting 91 indictments out of selfishness, the idea that he took a bullet for democracy out of selfishness. I mean, the selfishness is not a good theme for this guy. This guy has sacrificed a lot he's one of the wealthiest men in the world. He could be sitting back, enjoying his wealth, playing golf every day and not worrying about any of this. He's doing this because he cares about the country and wants to make it better.
And I'll ratchet it up a little more. Do you think this helped or hurt his relationship with his wife? Do you think it helped or hurt his relationship with his family as they all get sued and go through court and half the country loves him, half the country hates them? What do you think it's done to his buildings? What do you think it's done to the golf courses? They no longer bring the PGA events to his golf courses, even though they're the best golf courses. So please tell me where the fun part is. And number two is yesterday, a woman passes out. He's on stage, first time since he was shot, and he heads to the stands, leaves the bulletproof class to find out how she is. Let's listen. Cut 29.
Heard this woman collapsed. You walked over to see for yourself. Did you have any hesitation walking down those steps without the protective glass around you?
No, I didn't really. I wanted to help the woman. She had problems. She really had a problem. You know, it was very hot, close to 100 degrees. I'm going to be in a pretty hot place today, too, from what I just saw in your weather forecast. But she was in trouble. No, I didn't really. I didn't think too much about it. I don't want to think about it, actually. I felt we had very good protection.
So, please, that where's the selfish part again?
Yeah, no. You know when I first saw that was in the 2016 Republican debates. When Ben Carson, I don't know if you remember this moment, but Ben Carson missed his cue to go onto the stage and was kind of confused standing on the sidelines. They were showing him. And every other candidate, they kept calling the names and they just walked by and took their point. And Trump saw that Carson was in trouble and he just stayed with him and waited. And they walked out together,
in
dignity. You know, he has the capacity for enormous grace. He's just got to show that side of himself to the American
But he still
people.
Yells at Mark Thiessen once in a while.
Sometimes he yells. Sometimes he calls me and says, good job. It depends on what I say.
Got it.
I call him like I see him.
Yeah, that's who you do that, Mark. Thanks so much. Always appreciate you having you on. Stay safe in Chicago. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, Jeff, you're in Indiana. Jeff, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just was curious as to why nobody's talking about the actual main reason, or the main topic, I guess, that the president should be talking about when he gets down to the border tomorrow.
Which is?
The border's the root cause. It's the means to the end. You think about it. I mean, the border, they let millions of people in. which drives our grocery prices up, drives our home prices up.
Oh, that's where I know, but the president's going there, Jeff. But what do you want him to say? Why aren't more people covering that?
Honestly, if he just would just drive that issue home, I mean, if they hadn't opened the border, we already had our headaches from COVID. And then, you know, once things leveled out, I mean, it should have. It won't now. I mean, right now you got too many people here. So, you know, now you're feeding more people, you're housing more people, you're more clothes for people. You know, it's trickle down, major
right.
trickle down.
Well, that's why, you know, Jeff, you are right with the surveys. The surveys say immigration, right after the economy, is the most important thing for Americans. So also, there's some good sides to it. I want our first round draft picks to stay here.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Some folks just don't understand what it takes to be a good neighbor. Take Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Their Project 2025 will make things much, much harder for people who are just trying to live their lives. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this. But look, I coached high school football long enough to know, and trust me on this, when somebody takes the time to draw up a playbook, they're going to use it.
I don't want to stop you because you're on a bit of a roll. But they didn't draw up the playbook. When's the last time you thought that you said to yourself, there's a 900-page book. I bet you Donald Trump has read it. You can't at one minute say that he's all these terrible things and next minute think that he took a doctrine from a think tank and thought, I'm going to make my government around that. Have you met Donald Trump? I'm pretty sure he thinks he has his own ideas and is smarter than any think tank, even if it's the Heritage Foundation, which are a bunch of nice guys. But why wouldn't you, the Brookings Institute, be formatting Kamala Harris's 4 years? After all, nobody else has. There seems to be an opening there because we have no idea what she stands for or what she'll do. We just know what she did. Britt Hume is tireless, working another convention, doing great. Britt, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to talk to you.
Well, I know it's rhetoric and it's a big pep rally, but they're really digging into this Project 2025.
It's clearly not true that Project 2025 is a playbook for Trump, and as you suggest, you know, Trump doesn't like things like this. He doesn't want anybody pretending to tell him what his agenda is.
Never has. And, you know, Kevin Roberts is a good guy, but I'm pretty sure they didn't write that handbook. That's what they do, but I guess they're going to continue to go with that. The other thing is, you have so much to criticize Trump about. Why claim that he's cutting Medicare and Social Security? He never said that.
No, he never has, and he's, you know, you can make a pretty good argument that says he has been negligent,
yeah,
on dealing with the coming insolvency of both those programs. Something's going to have to be done, or they're going to go under, and you know it is not necessarily a feather in the cap of either of these parties that they so far refuse to do anything meaningful about that. So then come along and claim that they're going to cut those programs. Of course. We've been hearing this from Democrats for as long as I can remember.
So Bill Clinton, you must have got a lot of flashbacks. You covered that White House extensively.
Yeah, it was nice to see him. I've always liked him. I mean, I didn't necessarily admire him, but I liked him because you can't help but like him. And it was, you know, his voice has faded. He's not the man he once was, but he's still up there at 78, and he did fine.
But yeah, that's true. What is the theory, you think, between putting Clinton on Wednesday and Obama Tuesday, when Wednesday you would think is more prestigious?
I have no idea. I don't think it matters greatly because I think these first three nights of the convention, well, I guess they get a big number of people watching Obama, 25 million people, something like that, at least in parts of it. But I don't think they matter. The thing that matters is tonight.
What do you expect? I personally, if you ask me, I think she'll do good, right?
She'll do fine.
Yeah.
You know, the speech will be general, it won't be programmatic. It will be an effort to create a mood to further the sense of optimism and even joy that the party has enjoyed and is trying to associate itself with. So I think we'll see a lot of that. I think she'll do fine. you know, things get things will start to get tougher after this.
No question, but it's really going to start after this, Bridge. You got 75 days to the end. These guys have had plenty of time to strategize, lick their wounds, get used to the new candidates. I mean, literally, Donald Trump's team wasted about $100 million on Biden, and they find out the bump that they got is it doesn't exist because the guy they tried to bump against is gone. So it's jarring, I'm sure. And for the president of the United States, he thought he was coasting to a victory. So I think that it's been a couple of weeks, but I think he's ready to try to get the momentum. And maybe it starts on Friday because it looks as though RFK could be dropping out and endorsing Trump. Here is what Donald Trump said about that to us this morning on Fox and Friends. I happen to know your favorite morning show, Cut 42.
So I've known him for a long time. He's a, as you know, he's a little different kind of a guy. Very smart guy, a very good person. If he endorsed me, I would be honored by it. I would be very honored by it. He really has his heart in the right place. He is a respected person. Women love some of his policies, and I guess some people don't like some of his policies. But overall, I thought the Democrats, he was a Democrat. I don't know what he is right now, but he was a Democrat. They treated him very badly. I think he would have, you know, he goes around saying he would have beaten Biden in the primary. I think there was a good chance.
So your thought, what changes with this, do you think, being that he has about 5 to 7 points now in most polls?
He does, but he's been fading. And I think this is basically a way of dropping out of the race while still remaining to some extent relevant, if indeed he does, as has been speculated, if he doesn't say he's going to endorse Trump. I don't know that he will. It'll give Trump might get a little bounce out of it at the beginning, just because it gets his focus back on him in more or less a positive way. But I think in the long run, it probably won't matter very much.
Well, yeah, we'll see if he gets involved. I know guys like on the outskirts, the guys that were saying, yeah, Trump's not my guy, and I don't know who Harris is. They were going like Joe Rogan was going to him. I don't know how many other people will follow, but 1 or 2 points. Remember what Jill Stein did in 2016? I thought it was pretty significant. The other thing – go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it has happened in the past. Third-party candidates have – you know, arguably made the difference. Ralph Nader, as you said, made the difference to run race. He was involved in the Bush Gore contest. He was still on the ballots in some places and cut into and took more votes. It was believed from Gore than from Bush. So it can happen. It might.
Matt,
he's fading.
One thing I loved about the RNC is the personal stories. We got one of those last night. When Rachel Goldberg, whose son was taken hostage and is still hostage in Gaza and we hope alive, spoke. Listen, cut 15.
At this moment, 109 treasured human beings are being held hostage by Hamas in Gaza. They are Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists. Among the hostages are 8 American citizens.
So you have someone who's obviously in the middle of the October 7th attack, feeling as victimized by it. Outside, 70 people arrested, anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian, and some pro-Hamas. Your thoughts about this party's maybe dual, dual personalities on this issue?
Well, the party has a little bit of a problem because there's an element of the party that basically supports Hamas, which is a position that is decidedly unpopular in the country, broadly speaking. So the party has had to try to do the have their convention and not have that sentiment within the party reflected in the convention hall itself. They've certainly succeeded in that. And the demonstrations outside, which can be quite damaging to a party if they get really out of hand and become the story, have not amounted to that much. I mean, they're out there, and we do see them, but I don't think they really have affected things very much.
And, Britt, when you look at this party, I think they're trying to run as incumbent. They're trying to make Donald Trump the incumbent and trying to say the new fresh face is the vice president of the United States. Are they going to be able to pull this off? We know that factually couldn't be more inaccurate.
Well, they've always wanted the race to be about Trump. And so that was the natural way to approach him. And, of course, it was impossible to pretend that, anybody but the incumbent was the incumbent as long as he was there. But now the incumbent, Mr. Biden, is gone, and here we have a fresh face. So it looks like the new person against the previous president, and that I can see how it's going to be made to look that way. But I don't think that's going to affect the vote very much in the end anyway.
So, Britt, when are you going to be back? Are you going to be back on location for the debates?
I'll probably be in New York for the debate, wherever we decide to broadcast from.
And October 1st will be the vice president. Right now, I haven't heard anything about more than one debate of you.
No, I'm not. One debate is probably as much as if I were advising Kamala Harris, I can understand how they'd only want one debate.
Last time they tried that, they lost their candidate. Britt, I love that this, with all your experiences, so much unprecedented about it, it must give a real fresh feel to something you're very used to doing, correct?
It does. This is like this whole season has been like nothing I've ever seen before.
Now, do any of your grandchildren and children, are they watching you on television at this point? Are they saying, that's my grandfather?
They're in their 20s, Brian. If they were ever impressed with me being on television, they got over it a long time ago.
I'm impressed.
Well, I appreciate that, Brian. Thank you. I'm glad somebody is.
Britt, you, thanks so much.
All right, Brian. Always good to talk to you, buddy.
Same here. Man, it's fantastic. All right, so now every line shams. I'll get to that. I want to play some highlights, too. We've got a lot of different comments here, a lot from the vice presidential candidate, that to me, the fact that he is calling Trump and Vance weird is weird. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, my name is Julia. I was wondering if I can ask you a question.
Go ahead. What?
What do you think about the fact that Kamala hasn't given an interview?
I'm not going to comment on that.
Maybe she doesn't have anything to say yet.
I can sort of understand her tactics, like that the risk that something will go wrong and that'll be bad for her.
It's surprising. She clearly doesn't like giving interviews.
Because she doesn't need to. Upstairs, there are two or three suites with content creators, influencers. You know, they're communicating for her.
She needs to, because I don't think people really know what she stands for yet.
I'd argue Donald Trump is taking the same approach. He's sat with Theo Vaughn, Elon Musk. Those are not, obviously, legacy journalists.
You're from Australia. Do the candidates there give interviews?
Yeah, like every day. So it's very different in the U.S., yeah. Yes.
So what was that about, guys? You pulled that for me. I'm a little bit surprised. So that's from the Free Press?
Yep, that was the press being asked about Kamala not doing interviews.
And they don't seem to mind?
No.
It's crazy. I mean, why even do your job if you – why even show up every day? I don't – you know, there used to be a time where you'd say, well, judging by that anchor, I think they like the Republican more, the Democrat more. Then you have, well, I just want the Democrat to win, so if that means not getting interviews and no one reading my column or watching me on TV, that's fine. And it's fine with the people that hired them, which is crazy. It's not fine here, I'll tell you that. Scott Jennings was on CNN, and he is the Republican there. He does a good job, and he's always outmatched by about 5-1. But here's, they let him talk. Cut 22.
Gap that I still see in all these speeches, as good as they were, is that she's in the White House right now. Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years. And for all of the talk about division and the problems in the country and people are hurting, Democrats have mostly controlled this country. Trump had it for 4. The Obamas and Biden had it for the rest of the time. And somehow, it's still all Trump's fault, and somehow she hasn't been at the center of it. So to me, that's still the glaring hole in this campaign that hasn't yet been solved at the convention. How do you explain all of the problems that will be solved by the person who is currently in there for the last 3.5 years, who is supposed to already be working on solving it?
Like Bidenomics is working, the border is fine and secure, but don't worry about war in Eastern Europe and the Middle East is anything but peaceful. Francis, listen, WANI over in Auburn, Alabama. Hey, Francis.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I was really glad to hear you mention it with Brett Hume about Trump addressing the Medicare Social Security thing. I'm a baby boomer. I have lots of liberal friends, Democrat friends, and that's all they talk about is Trump is going to eliminate Medicare and Social Security. You know, he's going to eliminate it. And I said, well, what's what are the Democrats going to do about it? Well, they're going to make the rich pay their fair share, you know, and then we'll all be rolling in the dough. So there's just so many people that just are so convinced. And I heard Tim Walz last night say it again, that Trump is going to get rid of Medicare and Social Security. I just wish Trump would, every time I hear him talk, I listened to him the whole time he was on Fox News this morning. Didn't say a thing about it.
Well, you know, I tried to get him. That was my first question. You know, we played the Walz cut, and he went off on Project 2025, which I understood. But I wanted him just to say what he said before. And what Brit Hume also brought up, you know this, Francis, is that Social Security has to be addressed. It doesn't even have to be cut, but it's got to be addressed because
absolutely,
it's running out of money. So we got to make it solvent. But if you say that, they immediately do what they did to Paul Ryan. Look at who has to throw Granny off a cliff. You know what they did to, you know what George Bush said? I think we should give the people a chance to invest their money in Social Security. It's their money. And they quickly said he's looking to privatize Social Security. No, he wanted to give you an option, but it got spun differently. And next thing you know, George Bush could not do Social Security reform, which if you talk to Karl Rove today, it was his biggest regret. He thought it would be something he could get done. He just wanted to give you an option to be able to take a portion of it and put it into the market like they do with the 401k. So
my two grown children would like that. My two grown children in their 30s say, I would like that better than having all this money taken out of my check and then my employer having to pay all this money. And then we don't even know if we're going to get it. So he's just got to address it somehow. I know
And you know what the best thing is? A second-term president, in his term he'll be a second-term president, is really, some people say it's bad, and it is. There's some parts of it's a lame duck. Other parts of it are great because you could do anything. You could take off your own party. It doesn't matter. You could have people in your own party take you on, air quotes, and say, you know, I stood up to our Republican president, and then when they decide to go on with their career run in 2028. But it also gives you the freedom to really do what you think is in the best interest of the country, one of which would be taking this on. So, and I think that if Trump gets in, he's definitely got the Senate. If Trump doesn't get in, I think the Senate still goes because they got Jim Justice, and it looks like he's pulling away by 4 or 5 points over in Montana. Thanks, Francis, for listening to me on TV and radio. Julie, listening on Fox News 97.1. Excuse me, FM News Talk 97.1 in St. Louis.
Yes. Hi there. I am, like Francis, frustrated with Trump's messaging, but mine's a different topic. It's this joy campaign. We mock it and it is silly, but that is what a lot of people are voting for. I saw a woman with a Choose Joy t-shirt yesterday. So the rebuttal is right in front of us. In July, there was a study picked up by several outlets that said Harris had 92% employee turnover. What joyful person has that? It is fake. Her joy is fake. And I really feel that we need to take it on and let people know that piece of it, because they think she's nice and that Trump is just a jerk. But she's a jerk, too. She just hides it better.
Couple of things. Wow, that is a great point. That's why I love taking calls. That is a great point. And I'll add to that. She not only blew up her own staff after she became vice president, they all quit. But when she was campaigning, they all left. And at the end, even though they had money left in their coffers, they all quit. They said it had no mission. Some have said it was the worst place they ever worked, period, ever. So, and you could read it in Charlie Spearing's book, and these are not Charlie's opinions. These are quotes from people that work there. She's a monster to work for. So, and she's always has been. So there might be some people that like her. Okay, fine. But most of the people who are subordinates don't. And one thing you always say, how do you treat people you need nothing from? Well, that you need to work, people to work for you? They don't want to work for you. They'd rather leave the job that would have looked great in a resume, work for the vice president of the United States. They'd go, I'd rather quit. I'd rather be unemployed. How joyful is that? What a great point by Julie in St. Louis. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I want to see everyone October 20th in Peekskill, New York. History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Exciting time to be doing a show. A lot of times people say, well, you know, in August, not much going on. You know, the dog days of summer, baseball grinds on, football is all preseason. You know, there's nothing really going on in politics after Labor Day. Well, that was then. And then there's 2024. That is not the case. We're closing out the second convention. In 30 minutes, I'm going to talk to Karl Rove. He's over in Chicago. As you know, he also writes for the Wall Street Journal. And Victor Davis Hanson is standing by. He's the author of The Case for Trump. It's now updated with a brand new introduction out on paperback. And before we get to him, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Take Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. Their Project 2025 will make things much, much harder for people who are just trying to live their lives. They spent a lot of time pretending they know nothing about this.
Well, that is day three at the DNC. It's a party that refuses to acknowledge that they've been in power, but using star power to sell two things that they've done nothing to support: freedom and common sense.
Number two.
Then for him to say about Project 25 is disgraceful. They know I have nothing to do with it. I had no idea what it was. A group of people got together. They drew up some conservative values, very conservative values. I have no idea what Project 25 is.
And it's 900 pages. Trump, 75 days to potentially capping the greatest comeback in American political history. What needs to be done for that to happen, and how he wants to correct the record, as he did with us on Fox and Friends 1 hour ago.
Number one.
Tim, it's Kamala. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. How about you?
I'm good. You're going to be fantastic tonight.
Well, I'm ready. Thanks for the opportunity. It's going to be electric in there, and the messages this entire week are so great.
They love these phone calls where they're never in the same room, and they sound so natural, don't they? It's not over until the VP speaks, and that's tonight as Kamala Harris takes the stage. What she will say and what she should say, as we can now start to really examine her record and what she plans on doing as soon as she decides to tell us. Victor Davis Hanson joins us now, Hoover Institute senior fellow. Pick up his book, by the way, if you really want to understand what's at stake and what Trump can do, The Case for Trump. Victor, your thoughts about where this race is at right now in day four of the convention?
Well, they're going to get a bounce, but that convention was a mess. I mean, it was like the 1972 McGovern convention where they couldn't manage their time. They added speakers.
Yeah.
And it was, you have your key speakers speaking in the East Coast where the markets are at 11 o'clock or midnight. And then they couldn't really hide the fact that they had a coup and deposed the president of the United States, and they didn't want him around. And then he gave one of the worst talks of his life. It was harsh. It was rambling. It was mean spirit. It was full of the old suckers lie, bloodbath lie, Charlottesville lie. And, you know, I don't think they're going to get the balance that they think. We'll see what happens tonight with Kamala Harris. Their biggest problem is, though, and the Obamas tried to get around it, is that she's supposed to be the second coming of Obama, fresh face, when she's been here 3.5 years. And, you know, whether she wins or loses, Brian, she's still, after November, she's going to have 3 more months on her tenure. So she can do all she wants right now. She's got almost 6 months. So if she really wants to stop inflation or have wage and price control, just do it. Yeah. She could do it right now. And they act like that, you know, that nobody's been in control, and that she's coming out of 2008 like Obama, but they've been in control for 12 of the last 16 years in the White House. And this problem that they've created on the border, the economy, overseas, crime, New Green Deal, they created it. And that's the task that Trump has to have. He's getting much better. He had a rally yesterday where he stayed more, he jumped out of that protective shield to go look at a person's health. He remarked that he had no animus toward the Obamas, even though they went really low, and a really sick joke about fallacies, and I thought it was pretty crude. And he's starting to, I think, stick more to the issues the last 48 hours. And if he does that, he'll win.
Yeah, because if you look at all the issues, as you know, it's immigration, it's the economy, it's inflation, one or two, and immigration, three. And number four is abortion. So 3 to 4, there's not a person that he doesn't grade high against on pure track record without an ad. And we'll see where it goes from here. Bill Clinton saw, obviously, with all his years of experience, he says he's been going to these conventions since 1972. He thinks that people are getting too overconfident. Cut eight.
Here's what I want to tell you. We've seen more than one election slip away from us when we thought it couldn't happen, when people got distracted by phony issues or overconfident. This is a brutal, tough business. I want you to be happy. One of the reasons that President-to-be Harris is doing so well is that we're all so happy. But you should never underestimate your adversary. And these people are really good at distracting us, at triggering doubt, at triggering buyer's remorse.
Right, because he's forecasting. He knows what's going to happen when she gets in an interview and even gets in that debate, correct?
Yeah, well she's had two very brief, uncensored, impromptu events. And on one, she did a word salad out of the art of diplomacy on the tarmac. It was embarrassing. Biden was when the Russian hostages were released, and Biden looked over and thought, you know, I'm cognitively challenged and I can't understand a word she's saying. And then she had that impromptu riff on democracy and fragile. It didn't make any sense at all. And the problem with it is the more that they avoid putting her out there and the more that she thinks about it, human nature being what it is, she fixates on it. And now she's got a terror or a real fright of going out there without a teleprompter or, you know, a scripted interview. And maybe they can do it. I think their attitude is, well, we did it for 3.5 years with Biden, so we can do it for another 80 days. But I'm not sure they're going to carry it off. The theme of that convention was joy and hope or else. You know, it was really angry. You know, you're going to be happy, and we're going to talk about joy. And then they just... And we're not going to get low and mean and make fun of people. Why that's all they did. Well, it was just one attack after another.
You're right. And no one has to tell you about Kamala Harris. You're over in Stanford. So you've known her.
Yes.
And she was her and Gavin Newsom.
I've walked by her father. He was a professor of economics, Marxist professor of economics, who had kind of a change of attitude in his later years where he kind of disowned his Marxist ideology. But the idea that she's a poor girl from Oakland when her, you know, 0.001 of the population have two PhDs for parents and grow up in upper middle class neighborhoods. And that's what really gets people mad when you look at Oprah and she talks about all of the rough things that have happened to her. She's a multi-billionaire with an estate at Montecito. And then you look at the Obamas and they start in the whole thing, how we've suffered and Trump went after us, and we know how mean everybody is. And then you think, which house did they come out of today? The Martha's Vineyard estate, the Hawaii estate, the Chicago estate, or the Kalorama estate? I mean, they are in the upper class. And the same thing holds true for Hillary. So basically, that convention was about the nation's wealthiest and most privileged people lecturing to the middle class how illiberal they can be and how racist they can be. And I don't think it's going to sell. I think it's not going to work.
I hear you. The theme was Trump is selfish and he's small. He's selfish and a small guy. He's just a bully. He's not as tough as you think. Really? Didn't he get just shot in the head and propped up and yelled, fight, fight, fight? Anyone else get shot? I didn't think so. Number two is he's selfish. Can you please explain to me what he's getting out of this? The PGA is not using his golf club. Don't tell me it's helped his relationship with Melania. Don't tell me his kids aren't under unbelievable stress. Even his youngest, Barron, 3 separate cities in his teens while he's going to high school. The sacrifice he's made on his personal wealth. Please tell me where selfish figures into this.
He got nothing out of it. He lost $1 billion. He got fined that he's going to have to pay with the E. Jean Carroll and the Letitia James, maybe $300 million. He got shot. They tried to take him off 16 state ballots. He's had 5 civil and criminal suits going after him. He's the first person in history to be impeached twice, the first to be tried as a private citizen. They've destroyed his businesses. He doesn't get anything out of it. And when Obama says all he does is whine, that's all that Michelle, she was the one that said, they always raise the bar on us. Every time we try, they raise the bar. This is a downright mean country. You know, it's a downright mean country. I've never been proud of it until all they did was whine. And here they were $200 or $300 million with these estates. So, no, he got nothing out of it. And he's not out of the woods yet because, unfortunately, I'll be blunt. If you have a narrative on the left that Donald Trump is Hitler and you have a lackadaisical Secret Service that doesn't take his security seriously as evidenced by a 20-year-old something that can fire 8 shots with impunity almost, then what's it going to do? What is that message it sends to every nut in the country that, A, if you do attack the president, there's going to be a lot of people in this country who think that you got rid of a Hitlerian figure, and B, if a 20-year-old can get 8 shots off, then you can do a lot better. So he's... it's something to carry, you know, that knowledge that a lot of people want to kill him, and the hard left is indifferent to his fate, and they lack. And so far, the Secret Service has been very unimpressive in protecting him.
No kidding. And yesterday, he hopped off the stage because a woman collapsed. He wanted to help her, so he left the bulletproof glass, and he came back, and he wants some freedom. But I've talked to other people that have been in war settings, and they say you go through a lot when you get shot. When you get shot, when they just miss. Do you think that on some level, you know the president, the former president, do you think on some level he should have taken a little bit of time to collect himself and how close he came to suffering the same fate as Corey, who was just the firefighter who just showed up and got hit in the head with a bullet?
Trump is Trump. He did that first debate when he was probably battling COVID and didn't know it. And then he had no choice, though, because he was shot at and his ear was hit. And then he had to go right into the convention. So if he had said something, if he was Joe Biden, he would have gone to Mar-a-Lago for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But that's not who Trump is. He's kind of a Nietzschean figure who figures that anything that doesn't kill him makes him stronger. And that's his trademark and his brand. And I don't know how somebody that age can get 4 or 5 hours sleep and do what he does. And everybody says he's going to implode. He can't do it. He's lost a step. But he hasn't. And that's what's miraculous. That's his trademark, that he can out-campaign people. And I think Bill Clinton is pretty prescient when he sees what's happening. It's kind of like and he's talking, really, the subtext is, look what happened to my wife. I told everybody to take him seriously. I said the blue wall was not impenetrable. I told him not to go down to Arizona and try to run up a landslide victory while they neglected the blue wall. And look what happened. And I think he looks at the same way, because he's looking at the real clear politics averages of the swing states. And all of the left-wing polls admit that if you had the election today, Trump would win the Electoral College.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. So you write the book, The Case for Trump, but everything keeps changing. Number one, his opponent wasted millions of dollars fighting Biden. Biden drops out. You have a convention against Biden. Biden drops out. You wonder about all those speeches, how they would have been different if they were going after Harris, how the strategies would be different. What is the strongest thing he could do over the next 75 days? And what is your greatest worry if you're the Trump team taking place?
I think he's getting tired of people lecturing him about it. But the fact that he is getting tired knows that what he has to do, and he's good at it. He has to talk. He has to say, this was my record, and get specific, not just I was great, she was terrible. This was what the inflation rate was, 1.2. This is what the interest rate on mortgages was, 2.5. This is where we were abroad, no wars, no Ukraine, no Middle East. Just go through that. And then this is where we are now under her. She's been here for 3.5 years. She's not a fresh face. She owns this. And this is what she wants to do. She wants to take. She wants to buy back your semi-automatic weapons, and they left 400,000 of them, so they don't really care about that. They left 400,000 of them for the Taliban. Stuff like that. Be specific, compare it. Do not say she's stupid, she's an idiot, she's a lunatic. Explain, if you believe that, explain how and why she is with evidence. But the weird thing about it is he's very good when he does that, because in the second debate against Biden, he did that.
Yeah.
And in 2020, and even he didn't have to do much because Biden imploded this year, but he was pretty calm and patient. And when he does that, he's very good. And so he doesn't have to call the name calling. And what's nice about it, when he doesn't do that, they want to bait him. So you saw that at the convention.
Yeah.
They did every dirty trick. They made fun of his genitals. They talked about him being greedy, stupid, etc. They do that. So if he calms down and doesn't call names, they will call him names, and that's not their brand. Their brand is peace and joy and love. I mean, of course, that's not what they really are about. But right. I think he can do it. And then the other thing I'm worried about is when you have 70% of the electorate not voting on election day in these swing states, and you have third party harvesting, third ballot curing, registrations don't really have to match sometimes the voter rolls. deadlines can be 10 days after the voting ends. There's no way to authenticate that, and we've only tried it 4 years in our history. It didn't start till 2020, and they're past masters of it. They were the ones that changed the voting laws in the states while the Republicans were asleep. And I don't know if we've caught up yet or not, but I hope we have.
Yeah. Go pick up Victor Davis Hanson's book. Is the case for Trump. It's got new information, new introduction. Victor, always great to talk to you. It's going to be an exciting 75 days.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
You got it. And he's out on the West Coast, so he got up kind of early for us, so we appreciate that. Call Rove in 10 minutes. Your call's next. I also want to get back, talk a little about what's happening with how they're phrasing Donald Trump against freedom. I will give you an example how that's the exact inverse of the reality. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Last night was a danger to our city and a danger to our citizens in this city. Our residents, property, and CPD had to protect that. So CPD stepped up. We declared a mass arrest after our officers were physically confronted and attacked. We were not the initiators of violence, but we responded to it.
And that is the Chicago police, the superintendent speaking out after the protests yesterday. They arrested 70 people. They said there were dozens of arrests at the anti-Israeli protests conflicting with police. They went after them. Protesters have been moved through the barriers and out of perimeter on Tuesday. They clashed with police, and then they did it again on Wednesday. So arrests soon followed. They attempted to avoid a clash to no avail. They've been drilling this for the longest time. Here's a little bit more. Cut 25.
When you have people who show up with the intent on fighting with the police, destroying things, burning flags, and I can tell you right now, I'm looking at a leadership team who tried to talk to them, tried to negotiate, tried to get them to leave, gave them a reasonable amount of time, even though this was unpermitted, to speak and then leave. They refused to do that. And at some point, we have to take action.
Yeah, I expect this to happen on college campuses constantly. I think I'm going to be behind this microphone talking absolutely about Columbia, all the Ivies for sure, maybe not Dartmouth. And there's just going to be nonstop throughout the year. On Long Island, where I'm from, they're worried about some in the SUNY system, the state system. I don't know where this stuff comes from, how they even understand the Middle East conflict. There's so much nuance to it, and why they think our ally is the bad guy. Why does that always seem to happen? Why do we have to reason with people and explain to them who our friends are? Karl Rove's a friend of the show. He's next.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And we know if these guys get back in the White House, they'll start jacking up the costs on the middle class. They'll repeal the Affordable Care Act. They'll gut Social Security and Medicare. And they will ban abortion across this country.
None of that's true, but don't let that slow you down. And there's so many things to attack Trump on, I would imagine, that you don't like. You could go and take apart his, his tax reform, go ahead. You don't like he didn't finish the wall. I mean, Ron DeSantis and all these guys, they went after him. There's some legitimate things to go after him on the right and the left. Why do you have to make things up? Karl Rove knows it all from the inside and out, writes about it, talks about it. Former deputy chief of staff and senior advisor to President Bush. Karl Rove, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, what do you think of the speech? What did you think of his introduction last night?
Well, part of it was warm and personal, and, you know, we got to know the coach, and, you know, it was a nice touch to have his former players, and his introduction of his family was fine, but you put your finger on it. He is the affable Midwesterner who doesn't make a particularly good attack dog. And, talk about tone deaf. They're gonna jack up prices. Well, what do you think your administration, your running mate, has been doing for the last nearly 4 years, jacking up prices? She was the
deciding vote on these big spending packages, the Affordable, the Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Plan, and two federal budgets that spent trillions of dollars of money that we didn't have and caused the inflation that we're all dealing with. And that was the number one thing he said. He said he's going to jack up prices. Well, what have you been doing? And there was nothing concrete about what it is that even notionally what they would do, except not allow these four bad things to happen.
So he came off good. He delivered it well. But it just in terms of substance, he even said at that one point, you know, we owe it to the American people to tell everyone what we're going to do. We don't know what they're going to do. Right.
Yeah, right. Right. And look, I've just had this conversation with a bystander here in Chicago. I'm not necessarily from the perspective of a political, you know, former political operative, critical of them doing what they're doing. Because remember, they're starting with this. She's vice president of the United States, but we really don't know a lot about her. And we never do. I mean, this is her moment to jump out on the stage and define herself, much as, you know, George H.W. Bush did in 1988, with that famous speech at the Republican convention where Americans learned a lot about him. Now, the difference is that he was running to be the third term of a very successful president, Ronald Reagan. Kamala Harris is running to be the second term of a very unpopular president in the form of Joe Biden. So, but the main thing that they've got to achieve tonight is for the American people to say, I know more about her and I know enough about her that I could trust that she might be up to doing the job. Now let's find out what she would do if she got the job.
And tonight, she will do nothing about that. She won't say, I'm going to be tough on crime and I won't be able to be easy on the border. I think she's going to do a little bio and then talk about some things that how unprecedented she will be as a woman of color to become president at all. And if she's overcome the odds. But I don't
think
she
does that, Brian. If she does that, it's a big mistake. It is a big mistake. If you're right and she does that, it's a big mistake. Go back to 2008. Barack Obama did not spend his time at that Denver convention talking about how he would be the first black president of the United States. That expressed itself. And the more if she comes up and says, in essence, I will be the first woman and I will be the first black woman and I will be the first black Asian American woman, the more she talks about that, the less enthusiastic we're going to get. So, you know, what she needs to do is she doesn't need to lay out a policy program. You know, here's my 10-point plan. But she needs to lay out enough about her values and her views that we say, I know what makes her tick and I know what she's going to emphasize. And my mind is now open to hearing what it is she's exactly going to do. And, you know, you can't do everything in one speech and particularly a speech that's of a reasonable length at a reasonable time. But if she does what you think she might do, I'll tell you, that's a big mistake.
Couple of things. She doesn't want to get specific or else she would have. You refuse not to do an interview. That's one argument. The other one is refuse not to tell anyone what you're doing. Last Friday, when she rolled out some principles on an economic plan, it was ripped from the New York Times to the Washington Post and by most reasonable people when she talked about price controls, price gouging. She called it gauging. Now we hear through leaks that she's going to tax unrealized gains in the unrealized gains in the stock market, rack up the corporate rate to 28%. This is not stuff that's going to have her blend into the background.
Yeah. And look, it's going to be good. People will instinctively understand that if you want to try and tax wealth, may sound good in a polling question, but a lot of people, you know, a farmer saying, you know what, this farm got passed down from generation to generation and she's going to tax it as well. You know, somebody saying, oh, you know, they're going to tax, you know, what I've saved and put aside and hopefully for my retirement. And 28% corporate tax rate, who pays those taxes? Two groups of people, the customers of those companies, therefore making them less competitive in a world marketplace, and the employees of that company, because if you can't raise your prices, you got to cut your costs. So, you know, look, we one of the best things that Donald Trump did was lower our corporate tax rate to below the international average so American companies could be more competitive. And look what happened. We sold more, we exported more, and we hired more people to make those things that we were exporting. So, you know, just dumb. I mean, maybe test well in a focus group, But in reality, ordinary people will get it, particularly those that are in companies where they sense that one of the reasons that, our economy is not as good as it should be is because all of the rules, regulations, and costs that have been imposed on the economy by this administration, the Biden-Harris administration, if we need to remind people.
Right. But do you think they've been successful, Carl, in making Donald Trump seem like the incumbent and her seem like the new fresh face?
Well, I don't think they've done the former. That is to say, I don't think they have made him look like the incumbent. But they are doing a good job of introducing her as something different than Joe Biden. Now, there's a limit to how much that can be done. Because, look, at the end of the day, both of these candidates are going to be trying to be the candidate to change. I wrote a column about this in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago. Her problem is that on the three biggest issues the country faces, inflation, economy, and the border, she is upside down with the voters, and the administration is in even worse shape. So what she has to do, and she's, you know, the media has not been, you know, trying to hold her account for this. So it's been easy for her to escape it to date. But after this convention, it is going to be increasingly difficult for her to divorce herself from an unpopular administration. That's just the way of the world. You know, it's going to be increasingly more difficult for her to say, I wasn't responsible for all the bad things that you think are out there. And you see it in the polling. The polling shows that on the three biggest issues, she's got a deficit up to, like, I think it's like 15 or 16 points on the question of who is better to handle the border.
So listen to this, Carl. It's going to drive you crazy, but just hold on tight. These are various Democrats talking about how tough she is at the border. Cut 13.
We don't have to choose between a secure border and building an America for all. Under President Harris, we can and will do both. As a prosecutor, she took on transnational gangs and cartels. As president, she will fight for pathways to citizenship.
Kamala Harris is not weak. For 20 years, Kamala Harris has been tough as nails when it comes to securing our border.
All Republicans have to offer is demonization and bluster.
Okay, I could go on. But when you're sitting there listening to some of this, I imagine you did. Oh, you got to be kidding me. This is the toughest spin of all time. It's like saying George Bush was not aggressive enough on war on terror.
Yeah, look, this won't sell. I mean, she's got the problem with trying to become a change candidate is you have to say, I'm changing. So she has got to even implicitly say, we've got to make changes on the border in order to control the border. And, you know, if the question of this campaign is who is better able to secure the border, Donald Trump wins on that question. But she has got to do better than simply say, well, she'll be tough, but she'll also provide a pathway to citizenship. I mean, that causes people to say, who are up and for grabs in this election, get your priorities straight. Secure the border first. Then we can have a conversation about the other.
True. So know what I'm not hearing? Anything about climate change. Does that mean Democrats no longer believe in it? Or do they know it's unpopular, hurting too many people, technology not ready, so they're keeping their powder dry on it and just hope to win and then do more?
I think you're right. I think that's the latter, that, you know, hope to win and then do more. You'll notice that they have addressed it by talking about clean energy jobs. But, yeah, look, the old saw was that Democrats fall in love. You know, God, we love George McGovern. God, we love Michael Dukakis. Geez, we love Walter Mondale. And Republicans fall in line. Who's the next person who ought to be our nominee? At this convention, I said the other day, the Democrats are both falling in line. We're all behind the vice president of the United States, even if we're moderate Democrats or far left Democrats. And we're also falling in love because the sense of relief is palpable in this city among Democrats who are saying, oh, my God, we had a candidate who was on a sure path to defeat, who was not up to the job, and he's now out, and we've got a shot. So the Democrats are both falling in line and falling in love.
So you have in your column about, you know, Joe Biden was looking at the numbers, says I'm only 3 points down. George H.W. Bush was 17 points down at his convention. So you got to think, in theory, Biden sitting in the Oval Office thinking to himself, why can't I close the gap? Yet everybody else and people like you or I would say, obviously, he's failing. He can't deliver a speech. He doesn't ever hold a press conference. He won't sit for a hard interview. We would be pointing that out and we would get vilified. And they were saying, you don't understand how crisp and zoned in he is behind the scenes. Now they kick him to the curb, even though he was only 3 points down. The only conclusion is we were right the whole time. They just will not say it.
Yeah, that's right. And look, different politics today than 1988. In 1988, the number of ticket splitters of people who were truly not linked to their party was, you know, approaching a 25 to 30% of the electorate. Today, that group is less than 10%. We're in the time of highly polarized parties. We were in less polarized parties then. And the biggest difference was Ronald Reagan was a successful president. Joe Biden is not. So she is in the unusual position of having to basically put distance between herself and the incumbent president. Look, and I hate to go back to my favorite era, one of my favorite eras of American politics. The last time the Democrats did this, that is to say, they had to break from an incumbent administration that was unpopular, was my favorite 1896 election. And they did so by basically repudiating the sitting Democrat president of the United States, Grover Cleveland, state Democratic conventions, adopted resolutions condemning his pro-gold policies, and the Democratic Party was taken over by the progressive wing back then, the silver men, advocates of the unlimited coinage of silver and inflationary currency. And it didn't work out very well for the guy who made that change, sort of freed the Democratic Party of the responsibility for the terrible recession or depression that the country was suffering through, by saying the policies that put us in the economic ditch were the policies of that gold man, a Democrat who occupied the White House, and we have repudiated them. And they lost the election. And so she's got a very difficult task to run here. She cannot be seen as the embodiment of the Biden administration. But on the other hand, it's very difficult for her to say, nah, I'm a total break with it.
By the way, I'm looking at Jamie Raskin on the screen. By the way, just fill us in. So Grover Cleveland loses and comes back. So who beats him?
Well, he is beaten by he runs the first time and wins, gets defeated for re-election in 1888 by the Harrisons of Indiana, and then comes back in 1892 and beats Harrison, Benjamin Harrison, in his re-election bid.
Right. They begged him to come back.
About running again in 1896. But is literally soundly disabused of that notion by state after state adopting resolutions condemning him.
Yeah, it's so interesting. They begged him to come back, and he said, "I will come back, but I'm not campaigning. I'm just getting the nomination." And they said, "Fine." And then he did win. It's just fascinating.
In 1892, that's right.
Yeah.
Because remember, Harrison was so unpopular by the time that he had ended his first term.
Fascinating. Last question to you. Do you think there'll be a time when this is said, no matter who wins, where this country might, you know, Josh Shapiro, I can't do his biography, but I guess he's a moderate. And then guys like Senator Portman, I would label him a moderate. Do you think we're going to get back to that ever? Is this just two candidates? You know, is this just the way we are now? Or do you see us wanting to get back to center right and center left?
Well, I see the politics of America as broken today. But we have been broken before, and we've been broken in the lifetime of many of your listeners. We were broken in the 1960s and 70s. We were broken in the 1930s. We were broken for 25 years in the Gilded Age. Our politics was disrupted and angry and bitter for not just a few years leading into the Civil War, but from the election of 1824 until the election of 1860, American politics is bitter and divisive. So, yeah, we'll normality will return, but it will require leaders to do so. I make this offer. I wrote an article about this for the weekend Wall Street Journal last fall. And if anybody will send me an email at carl@rove.com, I will send you a PDF of the article, and you will find out we have been in this place before, and we have made our way out of it. And that's one important lesson that America's political system is resilient, and the American people come to a point where they say enough is enough,
yep.
and they insist that our politics be returned to a responsible battle between the two parties, not ugly, divisive politics. That moment is coming because the American people are unhappy with the state of American politics.
Gotcha. Karl Rove, thanks so much. We'll watch you all night. Appreciate it. Back in a moment.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Now it's time to find out if there's more to know. Todd Phillips says the Hulk Hogan movie starring Chris Hemsworth is scrapped. Originally planned to feature him and the WWE Hall of Famer. The film had been in progress since 2019. Known for what's taken so long with Todd Phillips, known for directing Joker, initially lined up to direct. However, during a recent chat with Variety, Phillips confirmed the project's cancellation. Quote, I love what we were trying to do, but that's not going to be coming together for me. Hulk Hogan had hinted in late 2023 that the film was unlikely to move forward, citing a business hiccup. After Netflix withdrew from the production deal, Hemsworth's optimism about reviving it fell. Guess what? I think it has a lot to do with who appeared at the RNC. Next, fitness guru Richard Simmons falls while at home. It contributed to his death. Lenny Simmons, his brother, says he got a call from L.A. County Medical Officer. Said Richard's death was accidental due to complications from falls and heart disease. He was supposed to go to the hospital, but he said, it's my birthday. I'll just wait for tomorrow. He died. Sorry to end on such a low note, but Richard Simmons is dead, and we knew that. At least that wasn't breaking news. But he was a good guy, lost a lot of weight.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.